Impenetrable Fortress podcast. This is the inaugural edition of the podcast, so we're still ironing out the kinks a little bit. It's a podcast all about individual defensive players and fantasy leagues involving them. I am one of your hosts, Alan Jackaway. Across from me is James Bunnell. We're going to be guiding you through the mess of defensive fantasy players because it's often pretty hard to find information about these guys. So let's get started now. Since this is our first podcast, we thought we would start with a little bit of an introduction to playing fantasy with defensive players and in general how defenses in the NFL works. I'm going to turn to Mr. James Bunnell, the expert in all things defense, for that.
So, in the NFL, there's a couple of different defensive schemes that you see all the time a lot. And you'll hear commentators throw around these terms, things like 3-4 fronts and 4-3 fronts and over-under shifted fronts and cover with a number after that.
And wide nine, too.
And wide nine, too, yeah. And you're going to hear a bunch of strange things, and they're going to sound kind of weird, but they actually, they make a little bit of sense if you have a little bit of knowledge, and because they're all pretty intuitive. The most basic thing to know about defense is that it's split up into the defensive backs, which are the cornerbacks, and the safeties, whose job it is to cover the wide receivers on the plays, and the defensive linemen, the tackles, ends, and linebackers, whose job it is to try to screw with the quarterback as much as possible.
Sometimes the defensive backs are called the secondary,
right,
and the linebackers and line are called nothing.
Nothing. Yeah, they're called the front seven a lot of the time.
Right, front seven. There you go. Because they're in general, and most defensive alignments will be seven players. Now, there's a difference between the 4-3 and 3-4, which we're going to get into in a second. But in general, seven players play in the front, and four players cover receivers running into the back.
Right. That's how it usually works.
You want to start with the 4-3, the oldest or most traditional alignment?
Yeah. So the 4-3 defense is very simply four down linemen in the front and three linebackers in behind them, right? That's two defensive tackles, usually a nose tackle, and somebody who's often referred to as either an under tackle or an over tackle, depending on how the scheme is set up, or sometimes just a defensive tackle not lined up at the center, which is kind of weird. And then two defensive ends on either side, and those defensive ends, those are your guys like DeMarcus Ware and Brian Aragpo, and their jobs are to, like, they're the pass rushers. They're the ones they need to that get in through the gaps and try to disrupt plays in the backfield as much as they can. The tackles' jobs is an unglorious job, but their job is to occupy as many of the offensive linemen as possible and just muck around.
And we're going to be talking about defensive tackles in some depth today because there's a pretty good defensive tackle on one of the teams we're going to be previewing. And because in the leagues that we're aiming for, you are required to play a separate defensive tackle from defensive end. Some leagues only require linemen, in which case most of the time you want defensive ends, as they tend to rack up more tackles, get more sacks than the players playing in the center. But if your league requires defensive tackles, we will be talking about that. Mm-hmm.
The other defensive front that you see a lot is a 3-4 defense. This is usually considered to be a slightly less aggressive, slightly safer, slightly less risky defensive front because you have only the three down linemen in the front, a nose tackle, and two defensive ends. And they tend not to get too terribly much penetration because a lot of the time in these 3-4 fronts, obviously you've got less guys crashing straight into the offensive lineman, but a lot of the standard 3-4 fronts have the lineman lining up directly opposed to the offensive lineman rather than slightly offset to one side or the other, which means that the linemen have to pause a split second before the play starts and try to decide if they want to go to the offense's right or left, which gap they want to shoot through. It can be a little more complicated. And transitioning between the two defenses can be very complicated for players, which is why moving from team to team can sometimes be a problem for people that you ordinarily would perceive as outstanding.
And there are a few players that we'll be talking about that are moving either positions this year or moving between schemes, and we'll try to discuss when it's applicable how that might affect their fantasy value for this year.
And the last important thing to talk about is you're going to hear commentators say all the time things like, cover two or cover three or cover... There's actually a cover for everything from zero to four. And all that that is, those terms are talking about, is actually talking about how the secondary is going to have to deal with the wide receivers on the plays. Cover zero, you would refer to as just man-to-man coverage. The cornerbacks have no help from any safeties or anything like that, and it's their job to just stick to their receivers for the whole play, and that is usually really hard to pull off, and you need really exceptional cornerbacks to be able to do that.
As far as I know, there are no teams that run a cover zero on a regular basis.
No.
They'd only run it on blitzing plays, where they had sent extra people to blitz the quarterback.
Yeah, that's more typical. Cover one is when you hear these plays where you've got free safeties roaming around in the back. That is a man coverage with one safety whose job it is to sort of be a safety valve in case one of the cornerbacks screws up and loses their receiver or something like that. Cover two, you hear a lot because thanks to Tony Dungy and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Tampa 2 version, which is just like a variant on the cover two defense, is a standard defensive look that you see a lot of times now. And that is what a lot of people would just call a zone coverage, where you've got two safeties who sit in the back and it's their job to cover one half of the field, and the two cornerbacks whose job it is to deal with the wide receivers when they're closer to the line of scrimmage.
And some of those great Chicago Bears defensive teams were playing cover twos,
yeah,
as do many teams currently in the NFL. We'll talk more about that.
Right.
I'm sorry, do you want to go
through
the
other... No, that's it. Three and four. Cover three and cover four are just more...
It's basically a measure of how many people you have in case a receiver gets past a cornerback.
Yeah.
Before we move on, let's just talk a little bit about the positions that are in defensive fantasy and what types of players we tend to prefer at each of those positions. I guess we'll start from the line again. We said earlier defensive tackles are the interior linemen. They tend to score fewer points than the exterior linemen that are defensive ends, who get a lot of points from sacks and tackles of the running back, especially if your league values stuffs. You can go onto our website, which is at alanjackaway.com, and look at the scoring that we use, which will give you an input of, you know, how you might want to set up a league. But if you value stuffs, defensive ends often get to tackle running backs behind the line of scrimmage, which can be worth extra points. So in general, we like defensive ends. If you can get a defensive end from a 4-3 defense, they tend to be slightly better than those from a 3-4, just because there's an extra defensive tackle occupying offensive linemen, so it's a little easier for the defensive ends to get into the backfield and get a sack, force a fumble, etc. In terms of linebackers, my experience has been that middle linebackers in 3-4 defenses, I'm sorry, in 4-3 defenses are very valuable. A lot of teams, you know, many plays are runs up the middle, and if those runs get past the defensive tackles, they fall to the middle linebacker to make a tackle. Ray Lewis was classic inside, interior middle linebacker.
Right.
For 3-4s, I don't have as good a sense about what players are generally better.
Outside linebackers in 3-4s are the ones that get sacks and stuffs, because in the 3-4, those outside linebackers are often the guys who are shooting the gaps that are made by the front three in the 3-4 defense. So you see, I misspoke earlier. Brian Arakpo is actually an outside linebacker in the Redskins.
As was DeMarcus Ware,
yes,
until this year.
In the Redskins 3-4, and he gets a bunch of sacks because he is always coming in. It's sort of hard to decide whether or not he is an outside linebacker who plays mostly like a defensive end because his job is pass rushing.
Yeah, and we're going to see that a lot with players. The defensive positions aren't quite as well defined as the offensive positions. We are going to use ESPN as our source for what players are eligible at, but we'll discuss how they're playing. Sometimes you can get kind of bonus points from a person like DeMarcus Ware, who this year is going to count as a defensive end, but still maybe playing sort of a little more like a linebacker, and that could lead to more points, as we'll discuss very soon. Cornerbacks and safeties are on the field all the time. I mean, your main goal is to get one that's on the field for all the snaps, so like there are, depending on the down and distance, they'll bring on more cornerbacks and fewer linebackers. So it's better to have one that plays more snaps, just because there's more opportunities. I also personally believe that it's good to have cornerbacks who aren't particularly good at covering players.
Yeah.
The most dependable stat for defensive players is tackles, and a cornerback won't get tackles unless the person catches it, and then they get to tackle them. Safeties is a little trickier. I like safeties on teams that have pretty good offenses, because then their opponents have to throw deep against them, and that gives the safeties opportunities for more interceptions, more tackles deep, etc.
Yeah, and safeties on teams that have very aggressive defenses are also good, because a lot of the aggressive defenses, you'll see them bring people from the secondary in to rush the line, and sometimes you end up with safeties with sacks, which is always fun.
In addition, there's a couple cases where safeties on teams that are bad are pretty good, just because the other players on the team can't cover or can't tackle, and it falls to the safety to make that work. All right, so we are going to move on to the main body of our preseason podcast, which is going to be reviewing all the divisions.
So, since there's no football to talk about yet, we decided that in our preseason podcasts, every week we're gonna review a pair of divisions for you in the NFL. So, by the time we get to the regular season, we'll have gone over in some detail the defenses of every team in the NFL.
Exactly. We'd like to start with the NFC East. We're going to move our way east to west over the course of the next 4 weeks. So we'll start with the NFC East teams. We're going to talk about them in alphabetical order, which means that we are starting with Dallas. James, can you give a brief overview of Dallas's defense?
I can. Dallas has recently, meaning during the offseason, switched from a 3-4 defense to a 4-3 defense. And in fact, they've brought in a defensive coordinator named Monty Kiffin, who, along with Tony Dungy down in Tampa, sort of revamped the 4-3 defense back in the 90s. So he's old school, but he knows what he's doing. He invented the system, so he's bringing a lot of fun things.
It's hard to remember this now, but there was a time when Tampa Bay's defense was pretty good.
There was a time when Tampa Bay's defense won them a Super Bowl.
Yeah, so. Yeah, seems so long ago, but that was, you know, think that era of Tampa Bay when we're talking about.
Right.
Everything we talk about for defense until we review Tampa Bay, just assume it was back then, not that recently.
Basically, yeah. So there's a lot of advantages that come with a 4-3 defense. You can be a lot more aggressive. You can be a lot more disruptive on the line. And when you have players like DeMarcus Ware, who's just like sheer athleticism makes them better than almost everyone on the field, if you have more people screwing around in the front, like on the line of scrimmage, and he has less people that he has to worry about, he is going to just wreak havoc with quarterbacks and running backs alike. One of the things that we like to talk, that defensive coordinators like to talk about is over and undershifted 4-3 defenses, and all that that means is an overshifted defense has the front four linemen lined up offset from center towards the tight end side, so towards the strong side of the field, basically. So you're sort of matching your strength and their strength and hoping that you guys are going to win. And an undershifted defense is the exact opposite. You shift your defense slightly offset towards the weak side where there's no tight end in the hopes that you are just going to blow straight through everyone and get to the quarterback before they have any idea what's happening to them. And so look to see DeMarcus Ware demolishing people off the line pretty regularly with these.
Yeah, so I actually love a lot of players on the Dallas defense for fantasy this year. I don't know how you feel about this. Dallas is a team. As you can see, if you go to AlanJackaway.com and the About section, we are both fans of NFC East teams, and neither of us are fans of Dallas. So, as a result, Dallas is not a team that I think either of us hold in particularly high regard, but there are a number of players on Dallas's defense that I think can be extremely valuable to you for fantasy. Since we were talking about their switch in defensive schemes, I think the first two to look at are DeMarcus Ware and Anthony Spencer. This year, you can play both of these players as defensive ends. And if you had played DeMarcus Ware as a defensive end last year, he would have been in the top five among defensive ends, at least with the scoring system that we use. So it's possible that that switch will see him getting fewer tackles, but if he can still put up close to a 20-sack season, then you can get a whole lot of points. And I have him listed 21st overall as my third defensive end. I don't know how high he wound up on your ranks, James, but I'm very high. I'm also very high on Anthony Spencer, who last year was quite good. last year, Anthony Spencer was the... Let me make sure I get this right. Last year, he was not a defensive end, so I have to figure out how he would have... This was not good. Last year, Anthony Spencer would have come in as about the top 20, about the 20th defensive end. I think that as he gets more experience playing that position, it's worth taking a gamble on him as one of your top defensive ends, and that you'll be able to rely on him week in and out at defensive end. In addition, among players that I'm very high on, Sean Lee got injured last year, but before he was injured was putting up huge stats at linebacker in their offense or defense. I expect that to continue. I have him ranked 17th overall as my 11th linebacker. He, I think, has a really good season coming up. I think he's almost a lock for 100 tackles and then, you know, more interceptions and things like that as well. Is there anyone that you are super interested in on the Dallas defense, James?
Not particularly, but don't let that, you know, sort of make you wary of picking them. I just hate Dallas.
Yeah, so again, we have our biases here.
Strong side linebacker Jason Durant, he's also going to be good. He put up respectable numbers last year, and this switch is going to give him more exciting things to do with his life. I think you're going to see him sometimes dropping back into coverage, but more often than not, he's going to be following Anthony Spencer straight to the quarterback. And so he's probably going to get a couple of assisted sacks this year. It's going to be nice.
How do you feel about Bruce Carter, who did pretty well in relief of Sean Lee last year? I wound up ranking him 50th overall among linebackers. I'm sorry, 109th overall, 50th among linebackers, which isn't, you know, I'm not saying that he's a surefire starter on your team. I would not want him as one of my starting linebackers, but I think he's worth taking a gamble on. Potentially, if another player gets injured, he could step up to a large role, but even without that, I think he should be somewhat reliable, unless you think that not going to be...
I have him ranked 177th overall, but that's, again, mostly I don't like Cowboys players, but I think... Yeah, not that I would want him starting on my team, but later in the season, if you've got problems with injuries or if you're looking for a person for a bye week, he's certainly someone to keep an eye on. The Dallas defense, as much as I hate to say it, is actually going to be pretty exciting this year.
Yeah, it's weird. The NFC East, as we'll continue to talk about, is a division that I've had a lot of trouble thinking about how the teams are going to work out. I think that Dallas is extremely talented on both sides of the ball, and yet I just feel like some kind of exactly, like some kind of collapse is almost guaranteed to happen in their future. So another thing we're going to be doing week in and week out on this podcast is looking at the betting lines for the preseason podcast. That means over under win totals for the year. The Dallas Cowboys over under for the year is 8.5 games. James.
Oh, God, I hate to say this, but I think I would go over on that.
I also think I would go over on that. Even though, you know, you Choke expect artist. A big collapse yeah. from them, I think that 8.5 is a number where I think they're better. You know, I think they have enough talented players on both sides of the ball that they should be able to get over 500 this year.
This is a do-or-die season for their head coach, so all the stops are going to be pulled out, and they're going to throw caution to the wind and try as hard as they can to win a Super Bowl.
So I thought we were going to move out of here, but we agree that their head coach is bad, though, right?
Oh, yeah,
I mean, it's
for
a do-or-die
sure.
situation,
no,
but he's like the worst. Well, I don't know. Okay.
At least he's not calling plays anymore.
That is true, so maybe it'll be a big improvement there on that side. All right, the next team on our list, going alphabetically through the NFC East, is the New York Football Giants, as I believe they are officially known. James, you want to go over your little overview of the New York Giants defense?
Yeah, so the New York Giants, they play a pretty typical 4-3 defense. Not a lot of tricks, but they don't really need it because they've actually got quite a bit of talent on their team. They're pretty good at pressuring quarterbacks. They're pretty good. They've got enough. They have enough talent in their secondary that they can hold on just long enough for the front seven to muck around.
The weakness traditionally for this team has been linebackers, and you'll see that if you go to our rankings. I think the highest linebacker I have from their team is Chase Blackburn as my 43rd linebacker overall, which is pretty weak for ostensibly the best linebacker on your team. James's number has him probably even lower.
I haven't ranked a single New York Giants linebacker.
Right. So you can see, you know, this is a team that obviously has won a bunch of Super Bowls in the recent years. I guess two Super Bowls in the last few years. And they've done it without good linebackers, and that's just what it comes down to. So even though, you know, most of the time linebackers are the surest source of points for a team in fantasy, this is not a team where we recommend looking at the linebackers early in your drafts. There is a player on this league, on this team, or two players really on this team, that I do recommend looking at early in your drafts. One of those players is Jason Pierre-Paul.
Absolutely.
Who I love. I spent over $50 on him in our auction last year. I was looking over that while I was making my preseason rankings, and I was like, oh, Jason Pierre-Paul, he really, really sucked to own him last year. He wasn't scoring that much. And then I was really surprised to see that he was the number two defensive end last year.
Yeah.
We will get to the number one defensive end later. He was behind about 100 points from J.J. Watt. But nonetheless, I had him ranked as number two defensive end when I first made my rankings. He's already injured his back, and there's some rumors that he might miss the first week of the season. So I wound up moving him down to my sixth defensive end at 33 overall. But I'm still relatively high on Jason Pierre-Paul. I think that he is a guy that's will get healthy, will be talented. I mean, he was the number two line or defensive end last year, and everyone pretty much agreed that he was not having the best year. I really think that he's someone that, if you can make it through this potential injury for the first week, that we can expect him to improve from that and maybe have get close to the season that he put up in 2011.
Yeah, no, I'm totally on board with you, Alan. I've ranked Jason Pierre-Paul 30th in my rankings, my second defensive end. I'm not terribly worried about his injury. I think that, firstly, I think that he's going to make it back for the season opener. And secondly, I think that even if he does miss it, he's going to put up some prodigious numbers this year and going to make up for it. I think he's a good person to keep around.
So what are your feelings? Another player on the Giants that was top two in his position overall last year is Stevie Brown, safety for the Giants. I said that I really like safeties on teams that can't cover that have linebackers that can't cover, and I said the Giants have bad linebackers. Last year, in our scoring system anyway, Stevie Brown was the number one safety overall. What are your feelings about Stevie Brown,
James? I have him ranked as my number one safety for this upcoming season. I think he's going to be spectacular. And I think you've sort of hit the nail on the head here. It's teams with bad secondary, or bad linebacking corps, but good safeties, because he ends up just being involved in every play.
Well, he gets to rack up tackles because the people in front of him aren't. Despite that, I was not willing to rank him number one, despite him being number one last year. I just don't think that he's as talented as the players that I have above him, like Eric Weddle. I went ahead and moved him down. He is my fourth-ranked safety. You'd still be, you know, very happy to have him as your number one safety on your team if you're in a league that only plays the defensive back position, where it can be a safety or cornerback. You'd be very happy to have him in that position. But I'm not willing to rank him number one overall over players that I believe are more fundamentally sound in terms of their play. Do you have any deeper players you want to discuss here? I have a few more players ranked, but no one that I'm, like, excited about.
Justin Tuck is a good person to keep an eye on as another defensive end. And not, you know, not J.J. Watt producing, but he's solid. He's
so
totally
solid. Did you rank Justin Tuck? I didn't rank Justin Tuck.
You didn't
Tuck.
Rank Justin Tuck. I feel like I ranked him, but let me check. I didn't.
I feel like he's an injury risk, and I feel like he isn't all that reliable. I agree that he has extremely good talent, but I just worry that his ability to put it together for a season may not be there.
Yeah, no, he didn't make my top 200. I just checked. Oops.
That's okay. We don't have to rely on them that hard.
Think in your hearts of Justin Tuck.
Yeah. And if you want to take a late-round flyer on someone who, you know, I think that he has the talent to put up a huge season. I just am not willing to rank him as though he's going to do it. When I think there are safer options for that defensive end slot for your team.
There almost certainly are.
The New York Football Giants season win total over under 9 wins.
Ooh, that's tough. I'm going to go under on this one, which I know sounds totally strange. But I do think that despite the talent of Jason Pierre-Paul and Stevie Brown, the rest of the Giants secondary is a total mess, and I have no idea who any of their linebackers are. So Like, I've never heard of their linebackers, so...
Yeah, this is going to be kind of lame if we agree on all of these. I think once we get to divisions other than the NFC East, yeah, we'll stop agreeing so much. I would also take the under here. I think that their offense is going to be a little bit diminished from last year. I'm worried about Hakeem Nicks's health, and I'm just very suspect of a team that has really no good linebackers. Their cornerbacks are terrible as well. I think I have Corey Webster ranked near the bottom of my top 200. And that's honestly mostly because he tends to give up a lot of catches and then get to tackle people. I mean, I feel like every time I watch a game with the Giants, there's a deep pass going over Corey Webster's head, and then it's Stevie Brown coming in to clean up the mess that he's left.
That sounds about right.
The next team on our preview is the Philadelphia Eagles, my favorite team in the NFL, the Philadelphia Eagles. Obviously just made it through a pretty rough season. And the Eagles, we just switched head coaches. Are there any changes to the defense that we can expect from the Philadelphia Eagles this year, Jane?
Not really, no. The system that was in place last season was starting to make sense near the end of the season, and I think the Eagles are going to stick with it. The biggest problem the Eagles have is their front seven can't stay healthy. Like, six of them cannot stay healthy.
Yeah, it's a bit of a concern. I actually didn't even rank Trent Cole this year. I love Trent Cole, but I did not rank him because I'm worried that he's not going to make it through the season, that he's getting a little older, and he's just not going to be able to put up the reliable stats. Mm-hmm. That may be a mistake, and you may see me adding him to my rankings in the next few weeks, but I wasn't willing to do it after having such an off year last year. Despite the fact that I actually am happy to hear that the Eagles are not changing their scheme, I thought that they were doing much better on defense near the end of last year. I don't have a lot of players particularly highly ranked on the Eagles. I do like DeMeco Ryans.
Obviously.
I think he's a talented player. He's playing in a position where he gets lots of opportunities at middle linebacker there. So I have him ranked 37th overall as my 20th linebacker. I think if you want to take a flyer on a player, or if you're in a league where you're required to play defensive tackles, I like Fletcher Cox a lot. I think that in his second year, he has a chance to drastically improve and start putting up huge numbers, or, you know, as huge numbers as any defensive tackle can put up. But it's not a sure thing. I have him as my 9th defensive tackle overall. It's just not something it's a player that I feel good about, but there are other players that I think have that same opportunity to move up in their system. And Fletcher Cox doesn't have the track record for me to put him above.
Yeah. I think it's going to be, conditioning is going to be the big thing for the Eagles defense this year. They need to, firing your defensive coordinator in the middle of the season, of course, doesn't help, but also if they can just stay healthy, they've got some veteran free agency pickups. Nose tackle Scary Sopoagua is
a spectacular name. A spectacular, if nothing else, name.
Has historically been good, but is, you know, in the waning light of his career, and it's questionable whether or not he'll be able to improve this defense anyway. But again, it's health. If they can just stay healthy, be terrible.
I mean, obviously, I root for this team, and I maybe have too high a regard for them, but I think it's unlikely for them to be as unhealthy as they were last year. So I think that the defense overall should improve that way. I just don't really foresee it paying off for you in fantasy.
Not really.
In addition, I think the offense should be better. It almost can't be worse. So I expect the offense to be better, and that leaves less opportunity for defensive players. That's just one of the realities here. If you don't have any other players you want to talk about,
yeah,
we will go on to their line. Philadelphia Eagles, having won just a few games last year, are listed at 7.5 games.
Oh, you got to take the over on that. They can't be that bad.
For 7.5?
Yeah.
You've got... Wow. So let's talk about the... Before we move on there,
yeah.
Let's talk about the whole... And before I give my pick, let's talk about the whole NFC East. So... We want over on the Cowboys, 8.5.
That's true, yeah.
I assume you're going to go over on the Redskins no matter what the
number
is.
That is a safe assumption.
I think we went under on the Giants, 9, but do you really see them winning fewer than 7 games?
I don't know. I mean, the NFC is going to be really competitive this year, and I think the Eagles' offense is going to be shocking to people, if nothing else. Like, I really think that Chip Kelly is going to turn some heads and also make some coaches rip up their clipboards, because it's going to be something that, you know, I mean, last year we got a glimpse of it with the Patriots' hurry-up offense, but this is like that times 10. It's just not even close to anything right. These guys have seen in years.
Well, I am very excited about Chip Kelly, and I think the team is improving, but as an emotional hedge / reverse jinx, I am going to take the under on my own Philadelphia Eagles for the 2013 seasons. I think 7 wins sounds almost exactly right. I just think it's going to take another year for them to really get everything sorted out and get themselves back over 500, so, or up to 500. The final team in the NFC East, the last team alphabetically, sorry to make you wait to talk about your beloved Washington Redskins.
No problems at all.
What can you tell me about your beloved Washington Redskins?
This year, their defense is going to be a spectacle to watch. I mean that in both good and bad ways, because while we're seeing the return of two players who played a total of, like, 2.5 games last season that were supposed to be big keys to our defense. Brian Arakpo, an outside linebacker, playing more like a defensive end. That man is unstoppable. He gets to the quarterback just hilariously well. And he is playing opposite Ryan Kerrigan, who is another spectacular pass rusher. Those two guys together are just phenomenal at bringing pressure and scaring the crap out of quarterbacks.
So you think I've probably ranked them too low at 125 and 130 overall. My 55th and 57th ranked linebackers, respectively, Arakpo and Ryan Kerrigan.
Yeah, so I've ranked Ryan Arakpo 7th overall.
Oh,
he's my
God.
Sixth linebacker, I think. Yeah,
he going to get 100 tackles this year?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
How many sacks you would need to
probably
to
like
rank
40 sacks, I think. Yeah.
7th overall. So just to try to put this in perspective, to get to be the 7th overall linebacker, you need last year about 165 points. That adds up to something like 100 tackles and let's say 15 sacks. Maybe some interceptions and forced fumbles thrown in there. You think he can do it?
I think he can do it. I think you're going to see a show from Brian Arakpo. But also, I am pretty seriously blinded by my loyalty to this team. So expect him to be good, but maybe not quite as good as I've been praising him as.
Okay, so do you want to bet on Brian Arakpo's tackle number?
Tackle number?
Maybe not. Maybe that's a bad idea. But I think it's going to be much closer to 50 than it is to 100.
Okay. So I do believe it will be. It'll be closer to 100. Maybe saying 100 is a little bit crazy.
All right. Well, it is a contract year for Arakpo. I think that he's a good. When you're looking at linebackers in later rounds in your draft, I think that he's a good one to look at. If you're in a keeper league, he's still relatively young. Could have a lot of good years ahead of him, but. I'm not quite
not
as excited about him as you are.
One of the things about the Redskins' defense is that's with Arakpo coming back and Merriweather coming back, there's going to be a lot of synergistic bonuses to this defense. Everybody's going to be able to play a little bit better because the people that they're playing next to are going to be a little bit better. It's going to be greater than the sum of its parts, I would say. I know you laugh at Brandon Merriweather, and you're going to laugh at the thing that I'm going to say after we talk about Brandon Merriweather.
Uh-huh.
But Brandon Merriweather, UMD graduate, go Terps, is going to show you something this year.
Right.
I think he's got a lot of talent at safety. He's got he lacks some athleticism, but makes up for it with an ability to read plays that is usually good. This is one of the spectacular, in both good and bad way, things that I'm talking about, which is that I think that he is going to be locked down except for, like, once or twice a game when something totally awful is going to happen and there's going to be, like, 80-yard touchdown catches. It's going to look a little bit like last year, but less of last year.
Did you rank Brandon Merriweather?
Very low, but I did.
Because I don't see him playing more than half the season, realistically.
Yeah,
the health is such a concern to me. I don't think that he's that good. I wasn't willing to do it.
Again, fans, that's a legitimate concern. I choose to ignore it as a Redskins fanatic.
I did rank a decent number of Redskins players. I mean, obviously, London Fletcher has been around forever. He comes in as my 13th linebacker. D'Angelo Hall is a player that I think is terrible.
I know. I have many things to tell you about D'Angelo Hall.
I learned recently that he had 90 tackles in each of the last few seasons. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, he's, 60-plus solo tackles a year, another 25 assisted tackles. He's had an average of 4.5 interceptions over the last 3 years, and last year he got a sack! He is going to be spectacular.
I actually was watching that game.
He does have a problem, and it is that somehow, in all of his amazingness, he is prone to giving up big plays.
because he's the classic. He's the classic of my theory that you want a cornerback who can't cover. Mm-hmm. He plays for the interception, but he's not that tall, so when he tries to jump up and get balls, a lot of times he misses and gives up big plays.
Yes.
But he does manage to pick up interceptions. He gets a lot of tackles as a result of his poor coverage. I think that he's a reliable number one cornerback for your team. He's my sixth cornerback overall. I think you'd be very happy to have him in your first cornerback slot this year, if maybe not quite as happy to watch him as a Washington Redskins fan.
Yep.
Anyone else? I know that there's a lot of, like, young and interesting talent on this team, and there probably is going to be some player that later in the year we're going to be talking about as a great player from this team, but I'm just not sure who it's going to be. Do you know who it's going to be?
I do.
Think it's Brandon Merriweather.
No, I don't think it's Brandon Merriweather. His name is Bakaro Rambo.
Oh, I like Rambo.
Yeah, no, he's playing second string to Brandon Merriweather, so you'd like this guy.
Okay.
Yeah, he's the, he is a, I think he was drafted in like the third round or something like that, but he was a safety who showed a lot of promise in college, and he's in the spot to take over for Brandon Merriweather when, as
after
Alan predicts, something terrible
injury
will happen. Yeah. There's another, the Washington Redskins drafted two safeties this year, and they are both playing second string to the current starters. Reed Doughty, solid but uninteresting. If this other guy, Philip Thomas, can show us anything, he'll, he has a good chance of taking that starting spot from Daddy. So, those are the ones you want to look out for.
All right. The over-under for the Washington Football Redskins. That's not the way we say it. For the Washington Redskins. 8.5 games.
So obviously I'm going to take the over on this.
It's a bet on your feelings about RG3's health.
Right.
I think, well, more than anything else, about how they've re-schemed the offense to work with him. I think this team is going to be good, but I'm going to go ahead and put them at 8 wins, take the under there. Some kind of either missed games from RG3 or him being less effective, restrained from running. I despite a reasonably talented young defense and exciting offense, I'm going to put them at 8 wins and take the under here.
The Redskins are a spectacle, but things can easily go wrong with a spectacle. So that's, I will say that concerns of RG3, Kirk Cousins is probably the best backup quarterback in all of football right now. So, yeah. I name a better one. I can't think of one. But then again, I haven't really thought about it, so.
We're going to try not to spend too long on offensive players here.
Right. I'm just saying.
Sure. I don't know. I've only seen him play one game or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So maybe he's fine. I mean, we saw one or two really good games out of Tarvaris Jackson, and then he started that playoff game and got blown out. I mean, like,
that's a good point.
I'm not sure that once teams really dedicate themselves to stopping Kirk Cousins, you could rely on it. But yeah. I could be wrong about that. Hopefully we won't have to find out. Despite being not a fan of the Redskins, I think the league is more fun when Robert Griffin is in it, so hopefully he holds it together this year with his brand new knee.
Absolutely.
We will continue our divisional previews with the AFC East. The first team alphabetically listed in the AFC East, of course, is the Buffalo Bills. What can you tell me about the Buffalo Bills defense?
The Buffalo Bills employ a 3-4 defense most of the time, and their defensive coordinator is embracing what's becoming known as the Belichick hybrid 3-4, which is actually much closer to what's called a zone coverage scheme, and the point of that is to disguise the coverage that your secondary is putting up there, and also to disguise who's rushing the quarterback. It's a way to sort of make the offense think you're bringing a lot of pressure when in actuality you may not be. It involves a lot of bringing defensive backs up to the line right before the snap, and then having either the defensive backs rush when you would think that a linebacker wouldn't, a linebackers will drop into coverage, or having only some linebackers go and the defensive backs drop back and are like, nope, I was just covering this guy.
And that kind of misdirection, I think, is standard in a lot of 3-4s, but this particular hybrid has a little more coming from the cornerbacks instead of the linebackers.
Yeah, and it's sort of hard to call what the Bills' defense is going to look like at 3-4, because you're going to see a lot of... You're going to see nearly an equal number of 4-3 fronts put up by these guys just because of this emphasis on disguise. So you're going to see a lot of strange things from them. This is a team where you're going to have outside linebackers who can line up as defensive ends, and you're going to be hard-pressed to tell what position someone is actually playing on this team. But it should be kind of exciting if they can pull it off. It's a complicated scheme.
Yeah. Well, and they also, of course, have one of my favorite safeties to watch in the league. I might be saying his name wrong, but Jairus Byrd. Yeah. One of my favorite safeties to watch. I've always enjoyed watching Bills games and seeing this guy play. He has my 6th-ranked safety. I think that you can expect big things from him. I believe it is a contract year for him. And I think that he's going to be really pushing to have a great year. The other players I like on the Bills quite a bit, I like Mario Williams. I think that he's another guy that you can rely on as your top defensive end. He had kind of a down year last year, but still came in reasonably high in the scoring. I just think that, you know, as he settles into Buffalo, he's going to improve, and he's going to... I think he's going to be a top 10 defensive end this year. I just think he's too talented to sit outside the top 10 for that long. The other players I like on the Bills are their 2 defensive tackles. I think both of them are very good. I have them ranked 13th and 14th among defensive tackles. Marcell Dareus and Kyle Williams. I honestly believe that one of these two is going to be in the top 10 this year, but I don't know which one. So they wind up at 13 and 14 for me.
I think I've sort of hooked my boat to Marcell Dareus.
Yeah, I think I have Marcell Dareus above Kyle Williams. I think he's slightly more likely to do it. He at least has a better history of doing it. But I think both of these players are talented. It really could be either one, but I don't know.
Right. Just an interesting point. The Bills have listed Kyle Williams as a defensive end, as first-string defensive end in their depth chart that they released at the beginning of the season. And it's true that these depth charts don't always mean a lot when you're talking about where they're going to play in the real world. But
wow, that would be great news. I mean, if you can play, any time that you can play a defensive end, a starting defensive end, as if they're a tackle in an ESPN league, you're going to be making out pretty well there. So if that... if he really is playing that, and hopefully we'll get a chance to look into that, that would be a great position to be looking at. So maybe I'll be moving Kyle Williams up in my rankings. The over-under for the Bills is 6.5 wins. I think this one's pretty hard. They have a new quarterback, obviously. They have a very exciting running game. I think their defense is pretty good. They don't, like, they're another one of these teams that I think doesn't have the strongest linebackers, but they get good pressure up front with Mario Williams and the 2 defensive tackles, and obviously Jairus Byrd is always a threat to intercept passes, so I'm gonna go over 6.5.
I don't really know anything about how the new Bills offense is going to work. I mean, I can't envision
either
how the new Bills offense is going to work. So, I don't know. I guess I have to go under, just because I have nothing to base that on.
All right. Fair enough. The next team in the AFC East is the Miami Dolphins. What can you tell me about the Miami Dolphins defense?
The Miami Dolphins employ a 4-3 defense. And the number one thing to pay attention to about the Dolphins is Cameron Wake.
I agree. I love Cameron Wake. Defensive end this year. I think he's in for another great year. I'm not concerned about his age. He is a little older than a player. He spent a lot of years in the Canadian Football League. So he's only been in the NFL a few years, but has much older than your average player. But I'm not concerned about that at all. I think that he is in for a really great year. He's my second defensive end in my list.
Yeah, he makes third, I think, for me. But he's definitely a player to keep an eye on. He's going to be... he is going to be screwing with quarterbacks all year long. He's just...
Yeah. The Dolphins also made a major offseason acquisition in their defense, acquiring Darnell Ellerbe from the... well, during free agency, but previously of the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah.
What are your feelings about Darnell Ellerbe this year?
So Darnell Ellerbe was supposed to be... I mean, last year he played the role of the replacement Ray Lewis while Ray Lewis was out with his torn bicep, and he actually did a pretty good job. I think, you know, and Ray Lewis even has said that he thinks that Darnell Ellerbe is going to be the next him, and if you've got a Ray Lewis sitting at your middle lineback position, I think you can only expect spectacular things to happen.
I agree. So I have him as my 18th linebacker overall, 31st in my complete overall rankings. I think we can expect a good year from him. I think that middle linebacker is a good spot and that he plays it naturally and successfully.
Yeah.
I don't have many other players. There are other players that I ranked from the Dolphins, but you can see the rankings online. There's nothing else I really wanted to talk about on this team, other than that I think that the Dolphins are in for a pretty good year.
Me too.
Their over-under for wins is 8. I like over.
I like over, too.
They'll probably win 8, realistically. But, but I'm going over. I think they're more likely to win 9 than 7. I think their division is not particularly good, and that, you know, Tannehill will continue to improve.
I agree.
Darnell Ellerbe will make their defense a little more solid. They were already pretty good in run defense last year, so I expect that, you know, they will improve and that this is a team that might be contending for a playoff spot.
Yeah, I think you can look to see the Dolphins... looking at a playoff spot this year.
I hope so.
I'd go over as well.
It would be fun. As a mention of disclosure, my wife does root for the Miami Dolphins, but I don't think that really is overly affecting my opinions on them. The next team alphabetically is the New England Patriots, a team that we have talked a whole lot about this over the last year, that's always talked a lot about. What can you tell me in general about the New England Patriots defense?
I can tell you in general that the New England Patriots defense is impossible to figure out. They play... Bill Belichick has mastered the art of the zone coverage defense. He gives you 4-3 looks, he gives you 3-4 looks, he gives you 5-2 looks, he gives you things you've never seen before. And what he does is he every week before the game, when he's looking at tape, he finds a way to make his defense shut down what the other teams do well, rather than trying to exploit weaknesses. And so far, it's worked pretty spectacularly. And they've got a lot of talent up there, too.
Yeah, it's weird to think about that. Since 2 years ago, they were, like, the worst defense in the league. Just terrible.
Yeah.
But they've been drafting well, and I do think that they're improved. Do you think that that improvement in their overall defense translates to a lot of players that you can play in fantasy, though?
See, unfortunately, I actually don't think that that's true.
Neither do I.
I think that there are there's one player that you should definitely keep an eye on, though, Vince Wilfork, because as defensive tackles go, he's probably one of the best. And he, in these weird schemes, he's listed as a defensive tackle, but, you know, half as often as not,
all over the place.
He's all over the place. He's going to get to the quarterback, he's going to get to the running back, he's going to score points, and you're going to be able to play him as a defensive tackle, and you're going to be really happy about it. I think they might suffer from the problem in their secondary. Of their secondary is almost too good to consider as fantasy players. Aqib Talib and Alphonso Dennard are pretty shut down corners. I haven't ranked either of them either.
I did rank Devin McCourty, who has been playing some cornerback and some safety. He's on the field enough that I think he gets opportunities. But yeah, I think both of those, you know, even though we give points for passes defensed, it's just not enough volume to really make them fantasy plays. So the only, you know, really top player that I have on their team is Jared Mayo, who, you know, reliable tackler. I think
reasonable.
That you can chalk him up for 100 tackles. But everyone else, I mean, I think that Chandler Jones is really talented and interesting at defensive end. I like Dont'a Hightower at linebacker, but none of them am I willing to draft particularly high because you just don't know on a week-to-week basis what the defense is going to look like and who's going to be having a huge game. I am happy to draft Vince Wilfork as one of my starting defensive tackles, as you said. I have him only ranked number 10 because there are some, you know, players I'm a little more excited about that are a little younger. But I think that you would be fine at the end of your drafts picking up Vince Wilfork to fill that slot on your roster. The New England Patriots over-under has been slipping a little bit. It used to be 11.5, but now when I'm looking it up, I'm seeing 11. So let's use that as our number. Over-under, 11 wins for the New England Patriots. I know this may be our least defensively influenced over-under number that we do the whole year.
So I'm going to go under on this because I think the New England offense, with the loss of Aaron Hernandez and Gronkowski, you're just...
And Brandon Lloyd.
And all Brandon Lloyd.
Three of their top pass catchers are gone. It's crazy.
Yeah, and with Wes Welker going to the Broncos.
Oh, right. All four. Maybe it might even be five. I don't remember who the fifth was, but I remember reading their top five receivers.
I just don't know what they're going to do with their offense.
I mean, either.
Tom Brady, as much as I hate to say it, is an amazing quarterback, and he can make people around him play better than they can be anywhere else. But I just don't know that they have anyone left to play.
I think it's going to be hard for them to get to double-digit wins. I know there's this thing where wherever hardship hits the Patriots, they bounce back harder, but I'm putting them solidly under here.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to have a good year, at least not by their standards. I don't think they're going to be terrible.
No, you'll probably see them in the playoffs, but...
I'm not even sure about that. I like the Dolphins to win this division. It's about 4-1. I like, if you're in a place where betting is legal or you've been able to set up betting, I like Dolphins 4-1 to win that division. I think it's a good opportunity. The last team that we are going to preview today is the New York Jets. Obviously, this is another team that has been kind of a mess for the last few years. It's easy to remember a time when they were one of the best defenses in the NFL. What is your assessment of their current look?
So, Rex Ryan has decided that he is going to focus more or less completely on the defense and leave the offense to his offensive coordinators. Which is good, because that's what Rex Ryan does. Rex Ryan is good at defense. They employ a 3-4 defense more often than not. And the player to watch out for on the New York Jets is Muhammad Wilkerson.
I completely agree.
Yeah, he's going to be a destructive force.
He already was last year.
Yeah, and he's only going to get better.
Figuring out what to do with him. This is a player that you may not have ever heard of. You might have spent the whole year last year watching football and never have heard of Muhammad Wilkerson. But like Geno Atkins, who was the number one defensive tackle overall last year, at number two came in Muhammad Wilkerson, and I think he gives you a huge advantage in fantasy week to week over other players' defensive tackles.
Yeah. Also, the New York Jets depth chart has him listed as a D-end, which is...
But at the end, you can definitely play him at defensive tackle. They're moving him all around the line to give him opportunities to make plays.
Yeah, they know that he is a playmaker and that his athleticism and his intelligence make him dangerous just anywhere.
Yeah.
And so they let him roam and do what he does, and he does terrible things to offense.
I think there's a decent chance that at the end of this year, he winds up as the number one defensive tackle. Maybe a player that more people have heard of. I guess even last year, Geno Atkins was putting up huge stat numbers at defensive tackle and still... It's hard out there for a defensive tackle, you know. But nonetheless, I think that he gives you a big advantage over other players. I would take him... early in the third round or even late in the second round. I have him 22nd overall. If you look at the defensive tackle scores from last year, it's like Geno Atkins and then 15 points and then Muhammad Wilkerson and then 20 points and then a bunch of other people. I just think that they give you a point or two per week extra overall over your opponent, over anyone that your opponent could be playing against you. So... I think that in terms of the value that you receive over your opponent's position and in terms of winning from week to week, having Muhammad Wilkerson on your team is a huge advantage. We just spent a long time talking about Muhammad Wilkerson. That's because there's no one else I want to talk about on this defense. I think Leron Landry will be fine. He was the sixth safety overall last year. I have him eighth safety this year.
It's the other Landry. It's DeJuan Landry.
I'm sorry, DeJuan Landry.
Well,
he's not exciting, but I think he's, you know, I think he'll be solid.
Yeah.
You know, David Harris is, if he can stay healthy, a good linebacker, but I'm not willing to bet on that, so I have him 44th. You know, I just, there's not a lot of superstars on this defense anymore, and I think the result is that you pretty much, at least early in your drafts, want Wilkerson and Landry and not a lot else.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this. If you like rookies...
Okay.
And it is true that defensive rookies often have an easier time transitioning to the NFL than offensive rookies do. Keep an eye on D. Milliner. He's going to be kind of spectacular at cornerback. It's possible that with Antonio Cromartie on the other side of the field from him, D. Milliner is going to get a lot of passes thrown in his direction. And he was a pretty exciting player in college. Expect to see him get lots of pass defenses, maybe a couple of interceptions. Just if you like rookies like I do, keep an eye on D. Milliner.
And you think he's a surefire week one starter?
I think he's a surefire week one starter.
All right, well, maybe I'll have to move him into my ranks. Our final over-under for this podcast, the New York Jets. Over-under. Do you want to guess? What do you think it is?
I'm just going to go under. I don't care what it is. It could be four, and I think I'm going to go under.
It is not four. It is 6.5. I'm going to go under as well. I just don't think that... I think their offense is going to be a mess. Mm-hmm. Their defense, as we said, they have this one great player, maybe an exciting rookie. That's not enough to hold you through a season. I think you're looking at four or five wins at best, and that's part of why I'm so high on the Dolphins, is I think they're gonna take two against the Jets, maybe one against the Patriots.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for listening to the inaugural episode of The Impenetrable Fortress. We are going to try to focus on having more nonsense and less football analysis, certainly during the season. We do want to get through all these divisions and talk a little bit about each team, so I know it's been a little dry, but I promise that during the year, we're going to try to get it a little crazier. Maybe we'll be able to ramp that up.
Yep.
If you want to send in a question to us...
Oh, yeah.
Right now, the way to do that is by emailing Alan... at alanjackaway.com. Our website is alanjackaway.com. That's where the podcast will be posted. Hopefully that's all going to be working smoothly, and I'll be able to set up a real email for this. But for now, alan@alanjackaway.com is what you want. We would love to have questions or even just people writing in to tell us that you're listening. From Alan.
And James.
So long.